What's going on? This is episode 103 of the Clappercast. I'm Burke, and as always, joined by Sean. Sean, what's going on, man?
You know, I'm feeling awfully optimistic today. We've spent the last few episodes. I feel like we've done a lot of trash talking various teams and players for their offseason, so we're going to do something a little bit more positive today. We're going to look at some top 10 breakout player candidates for the 21-22 season. So, going to start us off here today with Colin Blackwell, who's been recently drafted in the expansion draft. He's going to be playing with the Seattle Kraken this year. Last year, he had 10 goals, 10 assists, 22 points, and 47 games with the Rangers. Surprisingly left unprotected. So Seattle, jumped on that and picked him up in the expansion draft. So the reason I put him on this list is that Seattle's fairly weak and unproven up front, especially with Yanni Gord is out for the beginning of the season anyways. And Colin Blackwell is going to have a chance to impress very early on to find a spot in this lineup on a team that has absolutely no dynamics. There's no real pecking order. He doesn't really have to, break into these established lines. He can just play well in the training camp in preseason and find himself playing in that second line or something. He's a very versatile player. He mostly plays wing, but he does take faceoffs. And he also plays penalty kill and power play, which is huge. So that energetic play style he has, it could make him just a breakout player for Seattle to, in a similar way to a lot of those similar type of players, did the same with Vegas in that inaugural season over there.
Yeah, I think there's actually a lot of players that you could have picked from Seattle here to have been potentially a breakout. And, I think Blackwell's an interesting one to pick. He does have that play style that I think a lot of fans are going to like. Just that kind of, bust your ass every time you're out there.
Yeah, total energy guy.
Yeah, and I think that comes from being a guy who had to, kind of fight his way into the league. He was drafted, but seventh round, didn't play for a while. I think he went through university. So he's really had to battle into the league. And, we'll see what he does. There's going to be some opportunity there. I thought it was funny that you said it was kind of surprising he was unprotected, because I think the Rangers have a lot of guys that they obviously needed to protect.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But it's definitely a guy that, that it hurts for them to lose, I would say. And definitely makes their bottom six, weaker because of it. He's definitely poised to, do well in a interesting new division here. See how that goes. Who do you think he's going to end up playing with? Because if he plays center and wing, it's kind of versatile, right?
So exactly, yeah. Yeah, you could see him kind of playing in that middle six where they've got, Cap Friendly's depth chart I'm looking at right now. They kind of have the second line is Jared McCann, Kelly Yarn, Kuroki Onostonskoy. The third line, Brandon Tanev, Morgan Geeky, Mason Appleton. So I feel like there is a spot for him in that middle six somewhere that, align with him and Appleton on the wings or something, or because they both kind of have that center wing eligibility, some sort of combo of those two would be pretty energetic, pretty good. Maybe even Tanev, Blackwell, Appleton is a third line or something. That could be a energetic, fast moving third line with some physical ability with Tanev.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be an interesting member of that team. If him and Tanev are on a line, that would be probably pretty fun to watch, just smaller players jumping around.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said, though, I think that there's probably a few guys on Seattle that you really could have picked for this that perhaps didn't get the opportunity in their previous team and could maybe kind of explode on the scene here. I know Appleton, we've talked about Alexander Wennberg a little bit too. And then once Yanni Gord gets in the lineup, what's that going to look like? I like that pick. I'll go with my first one here. And just a disclaimer, I don't think that these are the top guys in the league. It's just guys that I kind of thought might be interesting to keep an eye on. And could definitely, develop part of their game to keep kind of their trajectory going. And so the first guy I kind of highlighted here is Yegor Sharangovich of the New Jersey Devils. And so he's 23-year-old, drafted 5th round, 141st overall in 2018. So seems like a kind of a later round guy. He had his rookie season last year, put up 16 goals, 14 assists, 30 points in 54 games. He actually started his year last year in the KHL and got 25 points in 34 games with 17 goals. So he's definitely like a shooter. And when you watch him play, you see that, you know, his first NHL goal, which was with 1.7 seconds left in OT against the Bruins. And I remember watching that game live and just hearing the announcer go crazy for the Devils. But he only had 2 power play goals and 1 shorthanded goal. And so I think, like, if he gets a little bit more opportunity on the power play, he might be able to, you know, pump those numbers up a bit. And, yeah, you know, over a 82-game season, you know, he might be on pace to, you know, go a little bit, you know, definitely increase his totals. But he was playing top 6 minutes as a rookie with the Devils. He was playing with Zajac and Kuokkanen. Zajac got traded. Then he also played a lot with Kuokkanen and Hughes. You know, Jack Hughes had a good kind of a mini breakout last year. But Sharon Govich actually saw most of his 5-on-5 ice time with Hughes and Kuokkanen. And they had really good chemistry. So if they can build on that for next season, like, I think those numbers should go up. There's one goal where he scored against the Rangers where him and Jack Hughes were doing, like, touch passes basically all the way up the ice. And then Sharon Govich had a wrister from basically, like, right in the slot.
Yeah.
And he scored.
Yeah, so that's going to be good stuff to watch those two play together if they already have that kind of chemistry, you know, when they've just been dropped on line with each other.
Yeah, and so, like, it's like I was looking at all of his goals, and it's like, you know, they tend to be either off the rush or in that home plate kind of area that CPC calls it, you know, like in around the hash marks in the slot, and a lot of wrist shots. He's got a really good shot. So
that's promising to think of, you know, the consistency or the sustainability of that rookie season. If he's getting a lot of stuff off the rush and a lot of stuff down in front of the net, because that's, you know, that's harder to defend.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, his shooting percentage was 14%. So, you know, that's not, like, crazy. So, you know, it's you know, not absurd to think that he could sustain that. And I think, you know, he could easily reach 20, 25 goals next season if he keeps that up and keeps shooting the puck. The one thing that I also did see, was I mentioned he had 1 shorthanded goal. He actually held off Christopher Letang on a rush. So the Devils won a defensive faceoff in their own zone on the penalty kill. And then Sharon Govich, like, got the puck at, like, their blue line and was, like, basically, like, rushing down the left boards and, like, held off Letang and put it in. And so it's like, if he can keep using his body, because he's a big guy, like, he's like 6'2",
yep,
something like that, 200 pounds, something like that. So, you know, if he could start using his body a bit more, because, like, that shot, like, people are going to recognize that shot and defend it. So if he can kind of develop that other skill set a little bit more too. But, you know, we talked about Dougie Hamilton joining the team, and I think that, you know, with having that better defense pairing out there with that top line or top two lines or whatever, you know, like, I think that, you know, a pass from that first pass from Hamilton
is going to go a lot further
very
than,
easily see
than yeah, who they had last year. Yeah,
I can really see him getting some breakaways or, you know, getting himself open, getting a shot,
or even just having a better defender so that you don't get scored on in every rush. You actually can turn it around. Just something as simple as that. Who even cares about the quality of the pass you're receiving? Just the fact that it's not going back into your net.
Yeah, for sure.
I like that point you make about the power play time, because that's going to go a long way. He averaged 1 minute of power play time per game last season, so he's definitely not playing that top unit. You know, so with, you know, possibly Kyle Palmieri not on the team anymore, you know, there could be a power play spot opening up for him to jump onto that top unit, especially because we know Jack Hughes is going to be on there. If Sharon Govich and Hughes have chemistry, even strength, give him the chance on the power play, because that's going to be great for them cycling around the offensive zone.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, he was a rookie, but you didn't even know it, like, when you looked up there. He just looks good out there. So, you know, I think that a longer season might serve him well. You know, reach that 25-20 goal mark, kind of get yourself established. You know, We'll see if he can avoid the sophomore slump and kind of keep it going here. Who's next on your list here, Sean?
Next, I've got Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, Buffalo Sabres goalie. So I see this one as a very similar situation as to what Chicago went through last season, where Chicago entered the season with Colin Delia and Malcolm Subban as their tandem, and Kevin Lankinen kind of waiting in the wings as their goalie of the future, kind of a prospect who's just working his way over to North America. So very early on in the season, obviously, Delia and Subban are not the greatest tandem. Lankinen gets some starts. Lankinen takes over, and he does great for the for Chicago all season. I see what's going on in Buffalo this season as very similar to that situation last year, where Buffalo's going in with Craig Anderson and Aaron Dell as their tandem. You know, Anderson's like pushing 40 and was apparently about to retire if he didn't play in Ottawa. So for him to kind of jump back in and play for Buffalo, like, I'm not really sure what convinced him in that situation. And Aaron Dell's kind of an up-and-down backup quality player. So I see very early on Luukkonen here, who had 4 games last season with the Sabres before he got injured. He's going to get a bigger shot with the team very quickly because I can't see that tandem holding up long-term. So it's just basically a situational opportunity where he's probably going to end up being the best goalie of the three of them. He's going to get a lot of starts, and just, you know, he could end up putting up decent numbers. They probably won't be great because of the team he's on, but he's going to end up finally making his NHL debut and making a bit of a name for himself just by virtue of being probably the best of the group.
Yeah, he's definitely going to get his fair shake at winning the job, I think. Yeah, that tandem of Dell and Anderson probably won't last the whole season, I would think. So, you know, he's definitely the guy for the future. And like I said, he's going to get every opportunity to like kind of establish himself there.
And that's
kind of
what I think about. Maybe Craig Anderson was convinced to come in to help mentor Luukkonen transitioning into the NHL, because he spent a couple seasons down in the AHL and ECHL working his way up. Never like the most impressive numbers, but they're respectable. His 4 games last season with the Sabres, you know, he had a .388 goals against average and .906 save percentage. It's kind of hard to judge goalie numbers on Buffalo just with how many goals they give up. They're not the greatest, but you know, bringing in a 40-year-old or something, Craig Anderson, to start in net, it doesn't really look like the smartest move. But I think he's probably there to help mentor Luukkonen.
Yeah, and I mean, he was with Washington last season, you know, mentor there for Vanacek and Samsonov. You know, he's able to fill in a little bit, got like a playoff game when Vanacek got hurt. So, yeah, I think it makes sense that side. The scarier part of that, I think, is Aaron Dell as your right now 1A guy. That seems a little shady, but it's Buffalo. Like, it's pretty low. Low expectations, right? Yeah. So, you know, if they don't do well, it's not the end of the world. They're not going to do well. You know, their captain, Jack Eichel, is publicly wanting out, and they haven't signed Rasmus Dahlin yet. So it's like, what's going on? So I think, yeah, just kind of giving your goaltender of the future the most ideal situation you can, learn from a veteran guy how to be a professional, you know, how to bounce back from shitty starts and getting scored on and playing on a shitty team. You know, Anderson's played on some shitty teams, so, you know, learn from him. I think that's a smart move. One of the shrewd moves that Buffalo's done, I guess. You know, low-key, I like that. And, yeah, I think, you know, I remember Luukkonen being in the World Juniors and stuff and being absolutely unreal. So,
yeah.
You know, they got to do everything they can to make sure that he develops the way he should.
Yeah, because they absolutely need a decent goalie to go anywhere with this rebuild. So to have
Their next asset, yeah, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so hopefully they can get some. Hopefully he's a bright spot for that franchise.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to. Okay, anything else you wanted to mention about him?
No. So who do you have next on your list?
Well, it's not Rasmus Dahlin, but it's Rasmus Sandin. So, you know, across the water there. Rasmus Sandin, defenseman who's 21 years old on the Toronto Maple Leafs. 2018 29th overall pick. There was quite a bit of hype about him at that pick, he entered the HL like that year and got 28 points in 44 games and 10 points in 13 playoff games in 2018-19. In 2019-20, he had 15 points in 21 games in the A, and he also played in the IIHF World Juniors, where Sweden got bronze, and he was named best defenseman of the tournament, where he got 10 points in 7 games. So definitely like a gifted offensive defenseman. Last season, he only played 9 games with the Leafs, and he was on the taxi squad. Definitely, disappointing for him, but considering the Leafs won the division, like, that's fair. But he didn't get a lot of game time. I know that there's lots of Leafs fans that were looking to see more of him. And he only had 4 assists. I mean, 4 assists in 9 games isn't bad. They're all at even strength. So I think this season, because of the moves that have happened with the team, he should definitely have a full-time roster spot. He should get a lot more ice time, get a lot more game time. And not only that, he should also compete for that number one power play spot. Because, not sure if you guys remember, but the Leafs power play sucked ass last season. Which is funny because they have so many weapons. But, I don't think anyone's spot on that power play is secured except for Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. And so Morgan Rielly had his struggles. There wasn't really anybody who was available to take over for him. I really think Sandin could be that guy.
Yeah.
He's definitely a gifted offensive defenseman. And like those numbers show, he immediately had points in the AHL. So that could be a huge thing for him. His Corsi is great. In his limited games he has played for the Leafs, like, I think it's like 37 or something like that. He only averages 14 minutes a game, 55.3% Corsi 4. He does start in the offensive zone a lot, about 60%, but that's sheltered time as a young defenseman. So I think if they keep him sheltered a little bit and just play him offensively, he should be okay. The one kind of thing that I think, the Leafs will have to just accept is that it looks like he'll be playing on the third pairing with Travis Dermott. And I have in here Travis Spinarana giveaway Dermott. So it would be better, I think, if they could have had him playing with a guy like Bogosian or something, like a veteran guy.
Or even swap it so maybe you got him with Muzzin or something.
Yeah, so, Sandin and Dermott are both lefties. Yeah. So, like, apparently they're both okay with playing the offside. I don't know if Sheldon Keefe likes that, but I think we could definitely see a bit of a shakeup there and what their pairings look like, But he is going to make mistakes. He's a young defenseman. He's undoubtedly going to get pressured and make some mistakes. He has been sheltered. He has been playing a lot of offensive time in his limited games. But, he's really got to get that. He's got to have that spot, to keep get that side of his game going.
Yeah.
Get some chemistry with the power play because they need all the help they can get after last season. They were really limping along. So if he can come in and spur them, I think, his point totals could just skyrocket because that power play is too talented to struggle. So, yeah. I mean, I think that as long as he, as the coach, doesn't punish him for making every little mistake or something, I think he should have a great year here.
Yeah, and that's a good one because something the Leafs didn't really have was much of an offensive presence on defense from beyond Mike Rielly. So what they're gonna get now is hopefully sending
Morgan Rielly.
So with getting Sandin kind of playing those bottom two pairings, they're gonna have someone who can provide some offense, some offensive spark to the middle forward lines. It's just going to give them another offensive weapon. So, Morgan Rielly's contract is up at the end of this season, and he's only making $5 million per year right now. There's a very good chance he's going to get a significant raise that, we don't know yet if the Leafs are going to be able to afford very well. So they might even be needing Sandin to develop this year, to help take over for Morgan Riley if they can't re-sign him after.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point because I don't think they're going to be able to keep Morgan Riley. So they're going to be looking to their young kids to develop here so that they can step in. Like Sandin and Liljegren, like they're going to have to really develop, or they're going to have to look at bringing in someone cheap, you know, or the old Martin Marincin guy can come in and be the 7th or 8th, I guess, guy that can fill in. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of hurt to put a Leafs player on here, but, you know, Rasmus Sandin, I think, is a guy that a lot of Leafs fans are excited about.
Yeah, and it's so going to be a great opportunity where he's finally going to kind of find a chance to break into the lineup because, you know, they didn't really have a spot for him before, a regular spot, and like you said, this season he immediately slots in the top six.
Yeah. Yeah, it's his spot to lose, really. All right, so I've got center, winger, defenseman so far. Who's next on your list?
I'm going to look to Ryan McLeod for the Edmonton Oilers. So he's not going to be a top six player. He's not playing with McDavid or Draisaitl. He's not putting up 50, 60 points. But what Ryan McLeod is projected to be is a very solid third line center. You know, me being an Oilers fan wearing the Oilers jersey right now, I have to mention an Oiler on this list. Evan Bouchard is the obvious one, but I wanted to go with Ryan McLeod just because he's someone who might not be as known outside of the Oilers fan base. He's currently probably going to start the season on the fourth line, if not healthy scratching. He's only played 14 NHL games. He had 10 regular season games, 4 playoffs last year, only got one assist. But he looked solid. He was noticeable on the ice in a good way. He wasn't making a ton of mistakes. He wasn't creating a lot of havoc, a lot of negative havoc, or drawing bad attention to himself. But one of the signings the Oilers made, probably the only positive one they made, bringing Derek Ryan in. I really see the starting center depth as Derek Ryan starting as the third line center, Ryan McLeod on the fourth line, and Derek Ryan being used to mentor and train Ryan McLeod to take over that third-line center spot during the season. And when he eventually makes that third-line spot, it's likely he's going to be playing with guys like Warren Fogle and Zach Cassian. You know, both guys who can put up 30 points in a season that are going to help Ryan McLeod find that offense. You know, all three of those guys are going to be fast. You know, we've got physicality on the wings. We've got Ryan McLeod, who's been an excellent two-way player from the sounds of it, all the way from juniors, with an offensive touch that he's going to be able to help find when he gets a bit more ice time and a bit more opportunity to play with some better offensive players. Ryan McLeod, even a few years back when he was drafted in the second round, he almost made the Oilers roster out of training camp in his first season, coming out of as a second round draft pick, pardon me. So he's kind of been on the fringe here a little bit here, but the team gave him the chance to develop in juniors and gave him a season and down in the AHL. And then finally he's here in the NHL and he's looking solid. So I think it's really going to be a chance for him with the Oilers losing like Zhuzhar Kara in the offseason and a bunch of their depth players that there's now a center spot for him and he's poised to take it.
The Oilers and not rushing a player into the NHL, name a more surprising duo.
Right? It's weird to see them not, you know, not just like shoving someone who can't play in a position in the lineup before he's ready.
I remember when he came up and, you know, you were excited to see him in a game finally, you know, just locking down that 3C. I mean, you can never have enough center depth, right? So having a guy who can play a more complete game and not be too flashy about it or whatever, it's a solid piece to have on your team when you've got, you know, such a strong, you know,
well, it's
first line center.
It's so top heavy. Like there's very little offense. There's very little production outside of those top two lines. So the hope is that, you know, they can get a couple of guys, a few guys on the third line who can put up 30 points a season. We'll see if McLeod's offense can find its way in the NHL. But, you know, the hope is that putting him with two energetic, fast, you know, guys like Fogle, Cassian, maybe even Archibald on that line, who can all score, who can all put up 25, 30 points a season, that'll help, you know, McLeod find it in the NHL as well.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was looking at players on who to include on this list, I actually saw a lot of people talking about Jesse Puljujarvi having a bit of a breakout. So, you know, that's another guy in the Oilers that people are kind of eyeballing to have a, you know, a good season. You know, last year he didn't have, like, you know, bonkers numbers, but he had a better game for sure than, you know, when he was originally with the team.
Oh, so. Yeah, he was engaged in all areas of the game. He was fast, physical, surprisingly good on the forecheck and backcheck, quite tenacious in puck retrieval and everything. So he was looking good in more than just offense.
Yeah. Yeah, so a few players to keep an eye on with the Oilers for sure, which is exciting for you, because it might be an interesting year.
I need to just grasp at anything I can right now.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, my next player hasn't actually played a game in the NHL yet, so it seems a bit, I don't know, strange to pick him as a potential breakout, but I don't know, I'm confident. So my next player, another defenseman, Moritz Seider, Detroit Red Wings. He was drafted 6th overall in the 2019 draft. So like I said, he hasn't played yet in the NHL, but his arrival is greatly anticipated in the Motor City. He was the first pick Yzerman drafted with the team, and it was kind of a bit of a shock. You know, he went a bit higher than people expected.
Well, I remember all, like, the question marks and, like, what the hell? Like, this is, like, a reach.
Yeah, wasn't he pegged to go, like, late first or early second?
Something like that. It was a stretch.
So 6th overall. But, you know, Yzerman said, you know, this is the guy that we wanted. You know, and I think he said something like, you'll see why I picked him or something like that.
Yeah, some like, ominous message.
Yeah. And, I mean, like I said, he hasn't played yet, but so far it looks like he could be, you know, worth the stretch, because he's a big right-handed defenseman, 6'4", 203. He's only 20 years old. He's known as a defensive guy first, but, you know, he is kind of developing that offensive part of his game. And I think he could be, like, just the type of guy to kind of anchor that blue line for the next, you know, decade or plus in Detroit. You know, they're used to having that guy in Detroit, you know, so I think he might be the one. We'll see. You know, in the AHL, he played there 2019-20, got 22 points in 49 games. So he is a defensive guy, but, you know, he did get points kind of right out of the gate.
That's an impressive total as well. You know, for a rookie, first pro season, you know, to come and put that many points up in the AHL, like, that's a harder league to put up those types of numbers in for a defender.
Yeah, you know, just like Sandin too, you know, it's impressive as a young player to do that. And then last year, he returned to Germany, and was playing in the pro league, got 28 points in 41 games. And because of where Detroit is right now in their, you know, in their overall trajectory, he should get every opportunity here to keep developing and to build on his game. And, you know, he's played a couple pro seasons now, just not in the NHL. So I think he's kind of ready to make that jump. Everything I've read has said that he's going to be with the team, you know, for training camp and opening night. You know, I think if they pair him with a guy like Nick Leddy, similar how we were talking about with, you know, some of the other guys on the list here. You know, Letty's a guy that plays both ends of the ice at D. He's not as big as Seider, but definitely a, you know, could be a great role model for a youngster making his jump into the league. It could be a good pairing. So anyway, I know it's kind of weird to have him in the list here, but, you know, I think that, you know, with his debut, we really could be seeing, like, a franchise D-man. Yeah. Making his debut.
Oh, for sure. His development over the past couple seasons since being drafted has been just astronomical, where he's gone from, like, kind of minimal hype, is just a bit of a weird reach pick, to this point where he is now considered possibly the best prospect not in the NHL yet. You know, that's...
Wow.
It's pretty far, pretty, riot, you know, a rise of his stock, right? You're totally right. He's projected really everywhere to start the season with the Red Wings, and Nick Leddy would be a fantastic partner for him to give him that freedom, give him the coverage to develop in the NHL. You know, he's looking really good, so it's going to be fun to see. There's nothing weird about putting him in a breakout candidate list, because he's going to have a you know, it's going to be a breakout year for him. He could potentially end up in the Calder Trophy race.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely, I mean, Detroit's got a lot of bright spots, but I think he's going to be a huge one for them just to, you know, just reminded of when, like, Heiskanen made his debut for the Stars, just, like, how he looked, like, so complete, you know, in game one. Like, I'm just kind of expecting the same thing. I know that's not really fair to put on him, but, like, I think he's going to do it. So, anyway, I'm excited to see him make his debut and for Yzerman to just keep looking like one of the best GMs around. All right, who you got next on your list?
So we're going to go over to the reigning two-time Stanley Cup champions here, and I'm going to talk about Matthew Joseph. So Tampa Bay's had a little bit of roster turnover in their depth spots this year. They've lost Yanni Gord, Blake Coleman, Barclay Goodrow, and there's going to be some spots in those middle six forward spots for someone to take a bigger role, and Matthew Joseph is poised to be one of those guys to slot in and jump up a bit. This is his fourth season with the team. He's kind of jumped around a bit, where he had 26 points in 70 games in his rookie year, 7 and 37 in his second year that he kind of split some time in the AHL as well, then 19 and 56 last season. And his time on ice, he's very, very limited minutes, where he's only getting about 11 minutes per game those three seasons. So with the loss of Gord, Goodrow, and Coleman, he's now going to have a much bigger role with the team. He's probably going to see, you know, extra 3 or 4 minutes per game playing in those second, third line roles. Something about Joseph is that he has that kind of tri-forward position eligibility that we saw with Yanni Gord, where Gord would play anywhere. And Joseph could potentially fill that role if he jumps up the lineup, and you can play any position. He's playing on any wing, can play center if he needs to. You could really fill that utility player spot for him. So we've seen Joseph play really well. We've seen he has a scoring touch, something that Tampa Bay has no shortage of, but it's always fun to see them get even more of, because it's just an endless list of scoring threats out there.
Disagree.
But, you know, it's poised to be a breakout season where he's going to be able to take on a bigger role. And, you know, we could very easily end up seeing him playing on a second line with, like, Stamkos if they, depending on how Tampa Bay rolls their lines this season.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting, actually, to see them absorb the loss of that whole line of Gord, Coleman, and Goodrow, just to see how these players step up, if they're ready for the increased ice time. You know, guys like, you know, Joseph and Ross Colton, if they can play a bit more time, or if that kind of, you know, stability of having those, like, established guys, if they can overcome that or not. I think that they probably will, but it's going to be an interesting thing to watch, just to see, you know, where those players end up in the lineup now that they've kind of removed a whole line from the depth chart.
Yeah, because now they've got, you know, Corey Perry and Pierre-Edward Bellemare are brand new to the organization. Then, you know, Alex Barboulé, Ross Colton, and Matthew Joseph, all in those prospect positions, trying to find more regular roles with the starting lineups. So that's a fair amount of turnover in the roster here.
Yeah, so it's like, do they all the young guys play together? Do they spread them out? What does that look like? It's going to be, I don't know, just interesting to see, I guess. I just hope for once Tampa has like an Achilles heel, but it just never seems to happen. So I'm sure they'll be amazing. They'll all have great years. But yeah, I mean, Matthew Joseph like really filled in playoffs this last go around. And so, you know, it'll be definitely a guy to watch. Another guy that I have on my list in the Metro here, Oliver Wahlstrom from the New York Islanders. So he was 11th overall in the 2018 draft. Last season he played 44 games, scored 12 goals and 9 assists. Most notably here, though, is he had 10 power play points on the second unit predominantly. And then in playoffs he had 1 goal, 2 assists in 5 games, and then he was injured and didn't play anymore. And so it's not like a massive point totals, but like 12 goals is impressive, and then 10 power play points. Like, he's getting an opportunity. He's got a really good shot. And with Eberle being selected in the expansion draft, you know, their top six and their number one power play unit is going to look a little different. So I think he's really poised to get more opportunity here. You know, he could move up to the first line, but he'll definitely get up to that first power play unit with the last year's performance with, you know, Matt Barzal, Anders Lee in front of the net, you know, with Palmieri returning, and apparently Zach Parise is coming in. Parise has confirmed this, but the Islanders I don't think have yet. You know, Trotz will have some options. He likes to roll with the experienced players. Wahlstrom could see, you know, 5-on-5 time with some bigger names, and boost his even strength production. You know, with 10 power play points, that means he only has, what, 11 even strength? So that's about 50% on the power play. So, you know, he'll look to get a bit more points even strength. But, you know, like I said, Barry Trotz likes to favor the experienced players. So Wahlstrom's really got to be a more complete player, I think, for him to get that opportunity and have that regular ice time and the consistency. He only had an average of 12.23 per game last season. So I'll be curious to see if that jumps up. But regardless if his time on ice it goes up or not, the power play time should go up, and it's a full season. So he should see a spike in his point totals. And I think the Islanders are going to be good again. So I think he's going to be a guy to watch on that team for sure. Just, you know, increased opportunity and a full season could do really well.
Yeah. Yeah, he totally got some recognition kind of when he started breaking into the lineup more regularly mid-season, where he started noticing he'd play five games and put up four goals, stuff like that, where he's constantly on the score sheet. So, you know, for him to even if he is a power play specialist for the team, like, the Islanders could use that because they don't have, like, much over-the-top offensive talent. You know, they're kind of a deep two-way team, but outside of, like, Barzal and Anders Lee when he's healthy, you know, they don't have a whole lot of offense or a whole lot of threats, especially on that power play. So if they can get Wahlstrom shot somewhere in there, set up, you know, on the wing or on the point or something, like, that would be huge to give them another weapon to actually counter a lot of what some of their Metro Division opponents have.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I see him slotted in a lot on a third line with Pageau and Richard Panik right now. We'll see how Parise affects that dynamic. But that, to me, that's an ideal spot, and it's kind of covering the base of Trotz liking the more established, the more two-way proven, you know, not defensive liabilities, where you put him with Pageau, who can kind of help cover that and give Wahlstrom a bit more freedom offensively to go and produce a bit at even strength.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of P names on the Islanders. We could have a whole line of P. So,
oh, that sounds great. Let's not do that.
P line, yeah. All right. So, who you got next?
Last on my list here is Adam Boqvist, now with the Columbus Blue Jackets. So he's going to be heading into his third season now. He's an offensive defender, so we're going to look at point totals, where he had 13 points in 41 games his first year, 16 and 35 last season. So he hasn't yet established his place as a full-time regular NHLer. He's still playing kind of an every other night type thing. But this season, he's going into Columbus. He was the centerpiece of the Seth Jones trade, the main focal point to that return. And he is going to be probably slotted in on the top pairing with Zach Werenski. And that is an amazing situation for him, where he's now going to have, you know, a current top-end NHL defender who can do everything. Like, Werenski's great with the puck. He's offensive. He can defend. He's pretty much good at everything. And now Boqvist is going to have a chance to go and play with him instead of Duncan Keith. You know, he spent most of his time at even strength last season with Duncan Keith. That's going to be hard to develop, and especially hard for a younger offensive-minded defender. So it's really going to give Boqvist a chance to develop and just flourish in that offensive role. We've kind of seen Columbus take a bit of a change with the players they're bringing in and the system that they might want to use now that Tortorella's not there, where they want to focus a little bit more on some offense and giving Boqvist free rein to just kind of go and create on the top of that offense is just going to give them so much more firepower from the blue line, because you know, they're going to need help. They're going to need that first breakout pass. They're going to need Boqvist skating his transition game to be top notch, and to have him with Werenski, that's two people who can put up 40 plus points probably in a season on the same defensive pairing. That's going to be huge for giving them some offensive boost.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be in good standing here to learn from Werenski to model his game, his offensive game from him. You know, that loss of Seth Jones hurts for like the shutdown capability, but you know, having that offensive ability is really great. That 1-2 punch there on the blue line. And then Boqvist was, kind of flirting with QB of the power play in Chicago.
Yeah, so that was the other thing. Columbus is having trouble with their power play. You know, Werenski wasn't doing the greatest with it, and the unit as a whole just wasn't producing as much. So we could very quickly see Boqvist taking on that top power play unit for himself.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I think it's a great piece to get back in that Seth Jones trade, and it's a piece that I was surprised that Chicago moved on. So I think it's great for Columbus. They got a really great young player who can develop really nicely and add some offense to that blue line, because outside of Werenski, I don't think any of those other guys are super great or established. I mean, Jake Bean, they did pick him up, so he also will be looking to add to the point totals there. But, you know, the guys that they have already, I don't think are, you know, exceptionally offensively talented. So, you know, even if they end up splitting them up a bit, having a bit more of an offensive guy on two pairings or something.
Yeah.
Could be great.
Yeah, we'll be interesting.
And then it's just another option for the power play, like you said. You know, unit one, unit two. You've got two guys, so you don't have to put your best guy out there for the whole 2 minutes.
Yeah, and you have an option. Oh, they haven't clicked for a couple of games. We can swap it out now. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you know, Boqvist was playing fairly sheltered minutes in Chicago as well, only about 16 minutes per night. Obviously, playing first pairing with Werenski, he's probably going to be up into the low 20s. So that's going to be a significant boost of ice time. We'll see how much that inflates his point totals as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so a few young defensemen on our list here. I have a soft spot for D-men, so hopefully they all do well. Then I've got one more guy on the list here, and again, that might be another weird choice, but he had a bit of a his first season last season, but it was kind of a bit of a breakout, I guess. But Nils Höglander, so he's a second round pick, 40th overall in the 2019 draft. He finished 8th in Calder voting, so again, kind of, maybe a misnomer here to have him on a breakout list, but I think he's going to just get better. And the most important thing here, I think, is that people outside of the North Division will see how good he is this season. You know, he'll get some more exposure to the rest of the league. And just so Höglander last season, beginning of the year, he was 19. He made the team right out of camp. He basically had a top six spot. He just had great chemistry with Bo Horvat. He made the jump. He's 5'9". So just like Colin Blackwell, he's that type of guy that's, on the small side, but gives it his all every shift he's out there. You can see just how hard he's working. Like he chases down pucks. Like he's just relentless.
He plays, like he's like 4 or 5 inches taller than he is.
Yeah.
Like he's, he's that type of guy.
Yeah. And I know like this isn't perhaps a very positive connection here, but like the Canucks used to have Matt Cook, and when Matt Cook was on that team, he was like that. He's like a bit of a smaller guy, but you know, he hit everything that moved, but not so much Höglander. He does hit, but just that effort level,
that being engaged, the physical engagement with the game. Let's just hope he doesn't turn out like Matt Cook.
No, I don't think he will. I'm just saying, for the Canucks, that's kind of like the similar type player. But he's hardworking, gives 100% every time he's out there. A lot of focus gets put on scoring, and Höglander did have 27 points last year in 56 games, 13 goals, 14 assists, so kind of a nice 50-50 split there. But where he impressed the most, I think, was his off the puck, coming in as a rookie and just having, on the closer side to a complete game. Playing both sides of the ice, just the skill he has at retrieving pucks, stealing the puck, 42 takeaways. Possession numbers are great. His line mates have better numbers with him than without him. He's just a really great insertion to the top six, and he was kind of a surprise coming out of the gate that he was that good and stole a spot, basically, right? He did look good last season, but I just think that, you know, he's going to continue to work hard and get better and better and just keep developing. And, you know, his game away from the puck will just continue to improve. And, you know, maybe down the road he could be in, like, Selke conversations if he keeps up that style of play and keeps up his other numbers too. But, you know, playing with some great players on his line, I think he'll probably pump the numbers up. And in a full season, he'll start to get noticed a bit more, I think.
Yeah, so I don't know where you'd place him in the Canucks lineup, but just looking at the depth chart on Cap Friendly, they've got him on the third line, but I could really see him jumping up to the second, swapping with Tanner Pearson on there, and having that second line of Hoglander, Bo Horvat, and Connor Garland, and I feel like that would be a fairly effective line. You know, you mentioned that he already had chemistry with Horvat and stuff, so that would be that should be a solid connection. And you know, give him a few more minutes of ice time per game. He probably won't make the top power play unit unless there's like an injury or some sort of weird hot streak where he's putting up a ton of points with someone. But just to give them that scoring depth, and like you said, if he's a complete player to play on that second line, that's just such a boost, because the Canucks are a team that's very one dimensional. They're very offensive minded, and they need all the two way help, all the complete game they can get to just counteract some of the. You know, defensive lapses they have.
Yeah. So anyway, I just liked his game a lot last season, and I think he's going to build on it and continue to improve. And I'm excited to watch him. He's one of the guys that, you know, I had him on one of my fantasy teams at one point, and then I added him, kept adding and dropping him, but he's just fun to watch. So I just am grateful that the rest of the league will see him, you know, this season, because he's just kind of a bit of a hidden gem last season, I think. Aside from those five of mine, I just had a couple honorable mentions here, just some other rookies that I'm excited to see. So sneaking with the Canucks here, Vasily Podkolzin looks like he's gonna make his debut for the Canucks. Really anticipated there. You know, I debated putting him on here instead of Hoglander, but you know, went with the Hog. But Podkolzin, you know, Russian shooter, looking to get in there. I just think it's really interesting to see how Vancouver does with a young Russian player. You know, they've got some good history with that. And then the next up, I've got Marco Rossi of the Minnesota Wild. You know, I'm excited to see him play after, you know, experiencing, you know, some rough times with COVID and everything. Apparently he's healthy. He's going to be at camp, so... you know, looking forward to seeing him play and see if he can make that team. I'm not sure if he's gonna or not, but I do want to see him make his debut just for, you know, a bit of a bright spot, because it's been rough, I think, the last couple of years here for him. Do you have any other honorable mentions?
Does it count as a breakout season if Connor McDavid hits 150 points?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Does that count?
Yeah, 2.0 points per game, yeah. Or he's a bust.
Yeah, exactly. he's swimming in bust territory right now. If he doesn't hit 164 points, it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to quickly think here if there's anybody else that, you know, any young players that I think might want to keep an eye on. One guy I debated putting on the list here, but he doesn't have a contract yet with his new team, so I didn't know if I should put him or not. But Nolan Patrick, you know, he got traded to Vegas. You know, he is an RFA. He doesn't have a contract yet, but he's a big forward. He could fit in really well in Vegas. Yeah. You know, the relationship looked a little bit strained the last year of his, you know, deal with Philly. Just, you know, coming back from his migraine disorder. He only had 9 points last season, so it's minus 30 as well. So, you know, needs a bit of a change of pace. But I'm interested to see how he does in a different division, and you know, on a team as good as Vegas is, just how he can add to that lineup. Is he going to get more opportunity, or is it going to be more of the same? You know, Vegas is pretty deep, so
yeah.
Who knows? But
so one other person we could mention just due to team situation is Nick Suzuki. He had a great season last year. 41 points in 56 games was very noticeable in the playoffs. But with with what's happened in Montreal over the offseason, you know, losing Dano Tatar, and suddenly Nick Suzuki is vaulted, and Kotkaniemi, I should mention, but suddenly Nick Suzuki's vaulted up and slots in as the number one center. So that's going to be a huge opportunity for him to pick up a lot more ice time, a lot more power play time, and, you know, develop that all-around game he was starting to show last season.
Yeah, yeah. He's going to be thrust into it, I think. So, I mean, there's rumors that, or they're not rumors, but Jonathan Drouin apparently is going to take a shot at playing center. So they might have Drouin and Suzuki as like a 1-2 center depth. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. And then they've also got Christian Dvorak, obviously. So how do these guys all fit together now that they've had a bit of a tumultuous offseason? But yeah. Nick Suzuki, great year, great player. We'll see if he can keep building on that, and if he can handle being, you know, perhaps maybe the guy this season. What does that look like?
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.